is going on behind the Steel Curtain Nation. I'm Michael Beck, your host of The Live Mic, bringing you episode number 4, and I'm so proud to present this one. We got some amazing guests coming up. We got Tim Graham from The Athletic, Brian Batko from The Post-Gazette, and we have an amazing couple being featured on this episode's fan spotlight that you're going to want to check out. So stay tuned for all this great content. Today, we are going to be speaking about who else but Big Ben Roethlisberger. That's right, the Steelers quarterback who obviously has gotten a ton of coverage over the past year, of course, over his entire career, but more specifically, the last, about 12 months or so now, it's been kind of a whirlwind for the Steelers signal caller. What we really want to touch today here is just kind of our expectations of him moving forward, what we can see out of him, and just kind of how this offense is going to look with him at the helm for another year. And me, myself, I am quite firmly on team positivity on this one. I think Big Ben has some pretty big years still left in him. Who knows if he's going to go any further beyond what's left on his contract. He's flirted with retirement, of course, so much in the past, but when it comes to him, we really don't know until it's official. So I am a believer of him getting healthy and, quite frankly, returning to form that saw him put up some incredible stats in 2018, where he led the league in passing yards and not quite lead the league in touchdowns, but he did throw 34 of them, but he did lead the league in interceptions. We won't mention that too much, but those were the stat lines in 2018. 2019, of course, the elbow injury, surgery and rehab that today we have seen him come kind of full circle, I suppose, and he's throwing NFL passes now. Well, that, according to a speech he made, I'm guessing that was kind of a pre-operation flight with Big Ben sitting on the plane there. It seemed like he was talking to his wife, so that's the assumption. If it's true, I guess we'll find out one day. Maybe he'll actually get on the show one day. That's the goal, I guess. That's the big fish is Big Ben. But anyway, getting back on topic here, expectations and whatnot heading further. I think in 2020, with the revamped receiving core, obviously the additions of Eric Ebron and Chase Claypool, we'll see quite the new load of weapons for Big Ben. Of course, Deontay Johnson's also a guy that took a humongous step in his rookie year last year, led all rookies in receiving yards with some less than competent quarterback play, if I'm being completely honest. And he really wasn't able to turn it on until later in the season when he started to get going, a little more looks. He is totally a candidate of someone who could be a wide receiver number one, even if Juju can't take that role back over. But speaking of Juju Smith-Schuster, that's another guy that could absolutely explode with Big Ben coming back and with the additions to this receiving core. He can move back to the slot because Chase Claypool is that guy that can definitely line up out wide. Juju, could he come back to 1,400-yard receiver? Well, if he does that, this offense is going to be pretty spectacular, if I do say so myself, because really, it kind of looks like they're loaded at wide receiver if everyone can play as good as they have. Eric Ebron, who I mentioned earlier, if he can play at that kind of pace he did in Andrew Luck's final season in the NFL, holy smokes, would that be outstanding for the Pittsburgh Steelers. 14 touchdowns, like, that kind of production is something that I don't know when the last time they've had that. Maybe Plaxico Burress in his first stint, but that kind of red zone threat is just absolutely outstanding. Mix him with Vance McDonald, and again, mentioning Chase Claypool. Holy smokes, those are some big targets for Big Ben. Of course, we also have James Washington, who took big strides a season ago. Not only receiving, but pass catching the ball as well. O-line also retooled a bit. Of course, Ramon Foster's retirement and the additions of Steven Wisniewski and Josh Doctson. I think that kind of position will be shored up. And I could only assume with Big Ben back in the pocket, that O-line will probably improve just based on play calling, what they're able to do, a little less blitzing, Ben's ability to step up in the pocket. All these factors lead me to believe that he will be back and better than most of us are kind of expecting. So moving forward with Big Ben at quarterback, I think he is he's a guy that I would almost guarantee comes away with comeback player of the year if he makes it through 16 games. I'd be stunned. The NFL, when it comes to awards, it really boils down to really quarterbacks. It's going that direction almost every single time, if that's an option, especially when it comes to Super Bowl MVP. But we won't get that down that road too far yet. But Big Ben's going to be someone, if he can play as good as he has, is going to absolutely stun some people, because so many people are writing him off, and I think that's absolutely unfair. I think I'm going to take what he said to heart when it comes to him being in one of those best shapes of his career. I know it's almost cliche hearing that, because he does quite frankly say it every offseason, but who knows, maybe he just gets a little bit more athletic every year. With that said, let's bring in our first guest, and he can help me out with this topic here. We got Tim Graham from The Athletic. Hey, Tim, how are you doing?
Things are going well. I'm actually just pulled off the side of the road here. I was out for a little drive just to get out of the house, just to get some fresh air, rolled the window down a little bit, and trying to blow the cobwebs off and the stink off of me. But yeah, we're doing well here in Buffalo. Family's doing great. I'm thankful that we can still talk sports.
Awesome. What's it like being like a sports writer in a time like these with no sports on basically for 2 months?
It's been okay if you're a football writer, which I mostly am. I would say I'm probably 80 to 90% NFL writer. So the free agency period, the draft, it's really just right around now that the draft is over, and we've kind of talked through all the different ways that these new draft picks are going to contribute to the team and where they're going to fit in this scheme or how many downs they're going to play, all that stuff. We've kind of talked through that. Now we're trying to figure out what we're going to do with ourselves. And so the NFL has been good for us in that, you know, the schedule release too, can't forget that. And so there's been plenty to talk about from an NFL standpoint. I think it's now that we would be getting into the normal baseball season, you know, where right, we're like, oh, geez, now what do we do with ourselves? We don't have NBA playoffs or Stanley Cup playoffs to talk about, or to look for an excuse to go to the local watering hole to hang out with your buddies and watch a hockey game or an NBA game. But, yeah, so I think that's – but here we got the weather getting better, and so now the windows are open, and yeah, I don't know. We'll find a way to distract ourselves, I guess.
Well, you know what? That honestly, that couldn't really be too much better, still being able to cover some of the football stuff going on. That's pretty much gone ahead as planned. I guess some of the biggest news going on right now is Ben Roethlisberger going through his whole, I'm not cutting my hair or shaving until I can throw an NFL pass again, and of course yesterday.
Same with me.
There you go. Your hair might grow a little bit longer. I don't know. I don't know how good your arm is, but it's possible. It's possible.
I'm going to be 49 in a couple of months. So no matter how good I might have been at one point, which wasn't very good, but even that, I got no shot.
All right. Well, I guess with Big Ben saying that he can basically throw an NFL pass again, do you think he could actually lead that Steelers team back into the playoffs?
You know, I don't know if this is the mystique talking or just the fact that you're just used to seeing the Steelers be good. And I'm like I just mentioned, I'm going to be 49. So the first game I remember that is etched in my memory of when I became a football fan was the first Steelers-Cowboys Super Bowl. You know, so I'm just used to the Steelers figuring it out, whether it's Terry Bradshaw, Neil O'Donnell, hell, even Cordell Stewart for a little while there, and Ben Roethlisberger, Mike Tomlin is always on the sideline in a deep playoff run. So there's part of that that I'm sure is influencing how I'm saying this, but I don't see how a healthy Ben Roethlisberger is that much worse off than a healthy Tom Brady. You know, Ben Roethlisberger's younger and, you know, obviously maybe not quite as good. I mean, we're not comparing apples to apples, but if Tom Brady going to the Tampa Bay Buccaneers makes Las Vegas flip out and say, well, here's our new favorites to win the Super Bowl. I think Ben Roethlisberger getting to the playoffs, I mean, that should seem, you know, pretty doable. Now, it's not Ben Roethlisberger's fault if they don't, I think. I mean, we're assuming that he's healthy.
Right.
But you take a look at that division, and of course the Ravens are the class of the division. They're riding high. They're young enough. They're still talented enough. It's just a class organization, I think.
Right.
And from a personal standpoint, especially since Ray Lewis has retired, a class organization. I've always been a big fan of Ozzie Newsome as a general manager. I think Steve Bisciotti as an owner. But, I mean, you can't argue with the Steelers either. I just think that the Ravens are a little further ahead.
Right.
I mean, the Bengals, you don't have to worry about them. The Browns are going to Browns. And so, yeah, I think it's you may be looking at the Steelers needing one of the two wild card berths to make it in. Or whatever it is this year. That's the one thing that gets confusing. It's a blur. The new rules do become they've kind of gotten on with that pandemic, you know, fogginess. I keep forgetting about that. But, so that's my long-winded answer to if Ben Roethlisberger's healthy, you can't count the Steelers out. You just can't.
Right. Now, I guess on the flip side of that, so say he is healthy but struggles a little bit, his arm strength isn't quite there, something I kind of saw out of Peyton Manning's last year, let's just say. Do you think it's possible at all that the Steelers could turn to Mason Rudolph, or would they just let Ben go down with the ship?
That is one of those philosophical questions that, you know, Ben Roethlisberger is one of the few quarterbacks in the NFL that's kind of earned that right, you know? Like an Aaron Rodgers or a Tom Brady. I mean, there are certain guys that you can't bench. I don't see, and it's plus Mason Rudolph, he had his moments last year, but it wasn't like we were watching the next coming of, trying to come up with a good example. How about this? I can come up with a better example if I do this. I was probably watching Bubby Brister more than I was watching, you know, the next Ben Roethlisberger for the Steelers. Yeah, it was kind of fun. You know, it was fun. There was some cool stuff going on there. Yeah, all right. And then it's like, then you'd see that, you know, there's a reason he was drafted where he was drafted. And he couldn't get it done necessarily. Do you go to Mason? It's hard. It's going to be hard to bench Ben Roethlisberger unless he's hurt. Now, if, like you say, your hypothetical there was if he's healthy but just doesn't have the arm strength anymore. I think unless he's in pain and he is out there playing obviously hurt and to the detriment of the Steelers, then I think you probably stick with him. It's one of those deals where Mike Tomlin, he sticks with his veterans. You've earned that right type thing. What type of psychological impact do you have on the locker room? If he's going to Mason Rudolph, it's because, all right, we need to salvage the season. We think we have a shot at the playoffs. Ben's hurting us. But how's that going to ripple through the locker room? Ben Roethlisberger still has his loyalists. It's always a difficult thing to navigate when you're a coach and you bench the accomplished veteran for a guy that everybody has seen not do well. You know, I'm thinking back to, you know, Cleveland benching Bernie Kosar for Vinny Testaverde, and I'm trying to think, they even skipped from Testaverde to, I don't know, it was Eric Zier or somebody like that. It's like you knew Bernie Kosar couldn't play anymore, but it tore the organization apart, and that's going to be tough for. I'm not going to. All right, I'm not saying that that's exactly what's going to happen in Pittsburgh if they do bench Ben Roethlisberger, because Ben also has got some people who give him the side eye. You know, Ben hasn't exactly been crystal clean in his leadership there with Pittsburgh. But that's a great way of me, I think, of answering that question without giving you an answer.
It was a pretty good non-answer, I suppose. I guess one more kind of NFL-based question before I just kind of wanted to ask you some questions about yourself. Last week's NFL stuff here. Baltimore and Kansas City seem to be kind of the class of the AFC, especially going into this season. Do you see a third or maybe even fourth team that could kind of surprise and just be one of those teams that could even end up in the Super Bowl this year?
And the Super Bowl, that's, you know, a surprise team. And I don't even know if they're a surprise anymore because they've been the sexy pick to do well because you want to seem smart as an analyst. And a lot of people are jumping on Buffalo. And there's two reasons for that. Number one, they're pretty good. They're young and pretty good. But then the other part of it is Tom Brady's out of the division. So there seems to be an opening. The Jets are struggling. The Dolphins are kind of a sneaky team. I don't think they're going to be great, but they finished strong. You know, the Dolphins started off 2019 as the team that we talk about. And this, there's one of these teams every year. Could Alabama beat them? You know, they were that bad. Yeah. But the Dolphins finished strong. I think they won four or five of their last eight, nine games, something like that. They had a great offseason, and at least, you know, they brought in a lot of talent, both in free agency and the draft. So I don't think it's going to be a breeze for the Bills in the AFC East. Are they good enough to make a Super Bowl run? No, I don't think so. But here's the thing is that your Bill, we're talking, we're going to a Super Bowl run. I mean, you get into the playoffs and by that point you have 16 games under your belt, 16 games more of experience for all those players involved, 16 games more knowledge for people like me and you to look and say, you know what, maybe, you know, maybe they are coming into it. So I guess for me to say it's ridiculous now would be a ridiculous thing for me to do. So Buffalo is a sneaky, well, they're not going to sneak up on anybody, but they are a team that I think could end up in that conversation.
Right. Awesome. So I guess we'll just transition to a couple things about yourself that people might not necessarily know. For starters, why did you get into sports journalism?
Well, by accident, I studied sports management at Baldwin Wallace College in on the west side of Cleveland. That's where the Browns facility was located at the time in the 80s, and they offered sports management. So and that wasn't a common major at the time. And so I thought, geez, you know, get a sports management degree, plus have the opportunity to get an internship with the Browns, the Indians, something like that. I'm from Northeast Ohio. But I went there and I started writing for the school paper my freshman year, fell in love with it, and I didn't change my major because I wanted to graduate in 4 years. I liked the immediacy of it, of covering something, having my name attached to it, as opposed to working out of a cubicle where you're kind of anonymous or you work at something and nobody ever knows that you did it. And it's for good or for bad. There's kind of a thrill in writing a story with your name on it, wondering if people are going to like it. Are they going to hate it? Did I do it to the best of my ability? And there it is. Take a look at it. Now, of course, it's Division III college sports at the time that I was writing about. But as time goes on, I, you know, start covering more and more. And I've been doing it now for 28 years. And, it's been great. I've been lucky to stay in sport, which was my goal, was to stay in sports for as long as I could and be able to get paid to do it.
Awesome. So I guess transitioning all the way to your career now, how did you wind up at the Athletic?
Oh, geez, long story, dude. I bounced around, and the two questions are related. So because I did not have a journalism degree, I did not take a traditional path. Baldwin Wallace, in fact, doesn't offer journalism as a major. That I had to kind of scrape a little bit to make my way. I didn't get the big internship. I started out at small papers, and I had to be ambitious. And the one piece of advice that I give anybody, and I teach sports journalism now at Canisius College in Buffalo, is be ambitious and be willing to move. Not just ambitious for a place to work, but go across, use the entire country as your opportunity. Because if you just limit it to the one place where you're from and say, okay, I want to get a job at the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette, and I'm not going to leave Western PA unless I, you know, ever, you know, I just love it here. And well, if you only are limiting yourself to the 10 papers within a 50-mile radius, I'm talking about the really tiny ones too, then your chances are pretty slim, as opposed to the hundreds of papers around the country. So I worked for the Boston Herald for a little bit, moved back to Ohio, then moved out to Las Vegas, where I stayed for 5 years before I went to Buffalo. I was at the Buffalo News for a bit. I covered the National Hockey League for 7 years. Felt like I'd hit a ceiling. Took a job with the Palm Beach Post covering the Miami Dolphins in 2007. Within a year, I was at ESPN. I had moved back to Buffalo because it's where my wife's from. And once I moved back, the Buffalo News tried to get me to come back. So when my contract was up at ESPN, I went back to the Buffalo News. And then I went to The Athletic. So it was kind of, I'm always reading the tea leaves, trying to figure out how the business is going, where I want to, you know, I always am looking out for the next place to go if, you know, hey, you never know if things are going to fall apart. So, or so it's not always just being a genius, like, oh, I saw this coming and I moved on. It's being able to have an option. So if things go badly, you can make a transition somewhere. And with the journalism business the way it is, you always have to keep in mind that there's some other place you might need to go. So I think that has been the key for me, the willingness to move and really never being satisfied with where you are and keeping your eyes open for all the different opportunities.
Awesome. I guess one last question. I know I've taken a little bit more of your time than we first talked about, but last thing here.
My time's not valuable, dude. So no apologies necessary.
Okay. So I guess right now, what is your favorite sports memory of all time?
Oh, geez. And then you ask that.
Yeah.
Well, I guess you can go when I've been doing this for 28 years, I go immediately to things I've covered. Now that might not be the case. You know, maybe the greatest game I ever saw was, you know, Boise State, you know, in the bowl game, you know, a few years ago with all the trick plays at the end. Right. I was at the fight where Mike Tyson bit off a piece of Evander Holyfield's ear. I covered boxing for a long time, so I've seen a lot of crazy stuff. I was at the Super Bowl where the Seahawks decided to throw at the goal line instead of hand off to Marshawn Lynch to pretty much hand the Patriots a Super Bowl. I was at that game. But my favorite sports memory, you know, I guess it was formative, and it's a good formative memory to have of never say die. The 86 Mets maybe winning the World Series, coming back, the ball rolling through Bill Buckner's legs. I of course, wasn't at that game. I was 15 years old. But I remember sitting there watching it on television. It's just indelible. As indelible as the ball bouncing off of Jackie Smith's sternum in the end zone against the Steelers a few years earlier. But watching the Mets come back and win that series was something. I think and I don't know if that's the answer, but that's what I'm going to stick with rather than talk your ear off.
Perfect. You have a catalog of sports memories that I think every sports fan would be jealous of. As we go out here, do you have anything exciting coming down through the pipeline?
No, it's you know, you're scratching, you know, to kind of to bring the conversation full circle. You know, you're scratching for ideas. I have some stories that I'm working on, but you don't know how they're going to pan out. It's hard in the way I prefer to do my journalism. I like to go to the place and interview people face to face. It's been difficult to do. So everything's been done over the phone. I've been productive, but yeah, it's just not the same. So I'm looking forward to things getting back to normal, and then I'll probably have something I'm really excited about.
Awesome. Tim, thank you so much for your time again. It was a pleasure talking to you.
Happy to do it. I'm flattered you'd ask.
Ladies and gentlemen, that was Tim Graham of The Athletic. What a great interview that was. He's definitely someone I'm going to want to speak with again. Let's keep this ball moving with our second guest because we got more Big Ben talk to come. Right now we got Brian Badko coming up. Brian, how are you doing?
I'm doing well, Michael. Appreciate you having me on.
Oh, pleasure is all mine. I guess my first question here is, what's it kind of like covering sports in the pandemic?
Everyone's asked me that, and honestly, I think I'm in a kind of a unique situation compared to my colleagues not named Jerry Dulac or Ray Fittipaldo at the Post-Gazette, because for the three of us who are NFL beat writers at the PG, it really hasn't been that much different of an offseason. I mean, we all know the NFL draft show went on as scheduled. OTAs haven't really gone on, but they're doing it virtually, and we've still had a chance to get some Zoom calls with rookies during what was kind of the rookie mini camp a couple weeks ago. So between the draft and free agency and all the other usual content that we churn out this time of year, it hasn't been all that affected, at least not compared to my friends who cover the Pirates, the Penguins, or even college athletics.
Right. No, that's got to be pretty lucky, I suppose. But I guess today we're mostly kind of focusing on Big Ben, kind of just specifically his return in 2020 here. Do you think there's any chance he can return to what he did in 2018, where he led the league in passing and put up those 34 touchdowns?
I think that's probably a pretty high bar to clear, and maybe too high a bar for just about any quarterback who would be coming off of this injury. But I think the bar for Ben success-wise in 2020 compared to 2018 is maybe not necessarily trying to match that yardage total or some of the other counting numbers he put up as the starting quarterback 2 years ago, but to be more efficient than he was, because in addition to leading the league in passing yards, he also led the league in interception. So if you can cut down on that, I think that'll help him, and it'll help this offense. And the big thing, too, is we were all sort of wondering this time last year if the new-look Steelers offense minus Antonio Brown would maybe help Ben improve on some of those efficiency factors. We never really got a chance to see it, other than what I guess a game and a half, six quarters that didn't go particularly well for him or his supporting cast.
Right. Now, I guess kind of on the flip side of that, let's just say something like what we saw out of Peyton Manning's last year, where he didn't really have the arm strength anymore. And let's just say that does happen to Ben, and whether or not he pulls back the offense in a negative way, do you think it's possible at all that he could be replaced if he's not up to snuff?
I don't think so. I mean, I guess you never say nothing is impossible, especially at the NFL level, but it would be really hard for me to envision that. And I think he is an experienced enough guy. He's a cerebral enough quarterback that if he doesn't have the same zip on his ball that he did before the surgery, and especially comparing him to a late career Peyton Manning type of deal, you'd still be able to see him probably scheme some stuff up, make checks at the line, whether you're going five wide and just kind of dinking and dunking. The little think and dink offense there. I think you could still pull something like that off, maybe more so than a backup quarterback would be able to. And if that's the case, then I think all of a sudden Randy Feitner's job even becomes a little bit more significant in terms of putting Ben in position to succeed.
Right. No, I'd have to totally agree with you. I guess, again, just continuing with Big Ben, his kind of social media obviously has gotten a lot of attention the last couple of days, obviously for a ton of reasons. Yeah. We won't really get into that, but what I'm kind of thinking of here, he's putting out these videos, seemingly kind of spending some more time with his teammates, obviously calling all the new players basically the minute they've been added to the team. So kind of my question to you, do you think he kind of gets the connection with fans and teammates now better than he kind of ever has?
Kind of hard for me to say, Michael. I mean, it was only my second year covering the team, and it's kind of weird that my first season covering the Steelers is an unprecedented one in terms of the Ben Roethlisberger era, at least, because outside of the training camp that I spent covering them out at La Trobe at St. Vincent, and then the preseason and those first 2 weeks when I was kind of in his orbit in the locker room and on the practice field, he was not really around all that often. And that made for a different year, a challenging year for him and his teammates and the coaching staff, too, I'm sure, if they were being completely honest. So I think it would be foolish to think that he hasn't maybe taken a step back and looked at all of these factors in the time that he was out. And it was kind of funny. I don't know if ironic's the right word, but kind of coincidental maybe or whatever that Ben Roethlisberger is one of the few Steelers who really, he said it before, he doesn't do social media. He doesn't pay attention to everything that's out there that you can find about yourself or your teammates on Twitter and Instagram. And yet when it's time to kind of make his little comeback hype video, he does put it out there on social media channels first and foremost. And obviously, the Steelers and Steelers.com were all over that as well. But that's a sign of 2020, if nothing else, that it was Ben Roethlisberger kind of more or less taking the Twitter to put out there his first NFL caliber passes since the surgery.
Right. That was pretty exciting, to be honest. I think just my opinion, my thoughts on that was just, I think it brought a lot of happiness to a lot of people. So I'm not going to question that whole decision, but I think that was something that brightened a lot of Steelers fans' days.
It was a savvy move. It was a savvy move, I think, by him and whoever came up with that, because it was what? It was late Monday morning, you know, not a whole lot going on at that time, and you put that out there, and then I guess not now that we've seen some of the offshoots of it, so I'll say for better or worse, but you kind of own the rest of the week in terms of the Steelers news cycle.
Right, and of course there was a little bit of kind of negative media that kind of nationalized a few guys just kind of blasting the team for whatever reason, kind of expecting poor results. Do you think national media tends to talk poorly or overwhelmingly positive on the Steelers just kind of because this fan base is so big and it's one that will get them a lot of views at that kind of level, a lot of kind of social media interactions as well?
That's another thing I get asked about a lot, especially I think from, you know, my readers and most of those people are local for the most part, considering we are a newspaper in Pittsburgh. But I don't think there is a definitive kind of positive or negative skew to national takes on the Steelers. I don't think they get talked about in a glowing light or a bad light more than one or the other. I think they just get talked about a lot. I mean, they're like the Cowboys, they're like the Packers, they're like the Patriots in terms of they're one of the bigger franchises. They're one of the more successful organizations in the league, and Ben Roethlisberger is one of the more well-known quarterbacks in the league. He's been around as long as anybody, not named Tom Brady at this point. So when national pundits and the talking heads or what have you discuss Ben Roethlisberger, there's going to be big opinions one way or the other. So I think that's something that Steelers fans are you know, probably used to for the most part by now, but you've never had a chance to get used to speculation on whether or not he'll be able to come off an injury quite like this, because he's never had an injury quite like this. So there's going to be a whole heck of a lot more opinions, good and bad, about Ben Roethlisberger between now and September, if I had to guess. And certainly they'll ramp up one way or the other once the season actually begins, if it begins.
Right. Now, if I could just pivot a little bit and kind of ask you a couple questions about yourself. Sure. I was just curious how you got into sports journalism.
Yeah, I mean, I went to Pitt, so I've been here in Pittsburgh my whole life, and I majored in, it was called Media and Professional Communications at Pitt, so I did student radio, I did some video stuff, and then I of course, wrote for the student newspaper, the Pitt News, especially more towards the end of my 4 years there, and after that, I got an I got an internship at the Post-Gazette. I started out on the copy desk, so proofreading stories, writing headlines, and I did that for 3 or 4 years, and then I was fortunate enough to get a writing job and was covering high school sports for about a year or so. Then I moved over to covering Pitt, which I knew well from my time being there at school, and covered the football program mostly there for two and a half years. And then when Ed Bouchette left the Post-Gazette for The Athletic, they needed a third Steelers writer, and that's kind of where I was able to get in, and it's been great so far getting the move from Pitt football to Steelers football. I don't have to go anywhere else other than the South Side, but covering a different team in a different league, and it's been fun.
Awesome. Two more questions before I let you off the hook. What's your favorite Pittsburgh sports memory?
Ooh, that's a tough one, but I think I've got to go with that second Steelers Super Bowl victory in my lifetime. Of course, I remember both well, but while the Seahawks Super Bowl was the first time I had actually seen a Pittsburgh sports team win a championship since I was born in 1991, I just think Steelers Cardinals was a better game and a memorable Super Bowl, whether you were a Steelers fan or not at that time. So that's probably the one that I remember the most. And it was also on my uncle's birthday, and I watched it with him. So one of those good memories that we always have together.
Awesome. Last question. This one's a bit of a challenge. What is one thing you want the Steelers fan base to know about you?
That's a good question, Michael. I would say that I guess I'll go with kind of a recent factoid about me. I don't know if it's a factoid the right word, but as cool as my job is, as much as I enjoy being a sports writer at the Post-Gazette and even watching sports, of course, in my off time or my downtime, my wife and I had our first child in January. So Dawson turned 4 months the other day, and I got to say that so far, at least through a third of a year of his existence, being a dad has actually been the coolest thing I've done so far, way better than any games that I've covered or athletes or celebrities that I've gotten to interview.
You know, I think that's my favorite response to that question I've ever heard. Brian, thank you so much, Michael.
I appreciate it. Sure thing.
Awesome. We'll have to do it again sometime. That was great. Thank you so much.
Yep, no problem, man. Good luck with everything.
Ladies and gentlemen, that was Brian Badko from the Post-Gazette. Two great guests with me today. I really appreciated going on with both of them. They had some great thoughts on Big Ben and kind of the Steelers in general. I really kind of like diving into these reporters' kind of personal sides, how they get into it, because typically we just hear them asking the questions and we don't really get to know much about the person behind the mic. Typically we get to learn a little bit more about the athletes and that kind of world, but the fact of the matter is we probably hear the reporters a little more often than we actually do from the athletes themselves. So I figured one of the great things about the show is that we'd be able to kind of chat with some of these people and learn a little bit more about them. So I hope you learn a little bit more about Tim and Brian with those conversations there. Again, thank you to them. Moving forward, we have our fan spotlight, last but not least for sure. We have Drew and Zaina. I guess my first question for you two is, well, how do you know each other?
So I can take this one. So,
okay.
So I work at TD Bank, as well as my scientist job. And we kind of had a secret relationship for probably a year and a half, 2 years, because I was actually her supervisor at the bank. She was a teller and I was a manager, loan officer. And
we were best friends for a while. Like, we hung out as best friends for so long. And then everyone around us just kept telling us, like, oh, are you guys dating? And we were like, no, we're best friends. We would never date. And then out of nowhere, one day we just, like, it just kind of happened. And now here we are, married.
Yeah, it was weird. Like, it just kind of happened. I, like, gave her a kiss, and she was like, are you sure? And I was like, no, but, like, let's just do it.
Oh, that's awesome. So I guess when I was just kind of looking at either of your profiles, I was just kind of curious that maybe somehow the Steelers were both tied into this, or I guess how did you both become fans of the team?
So I've basically been a fan since I was in the womb. My dad's from Pittsburgh. We now live on the east side of Pennsylvania, so we're near Philadelphia. And kind of growing up, my dad was a huge Steelers fan, so he paid for Sunday tickets, so I was fortunate enough to see it. She's actually from Southern Africa, so she didn't have as much – she didn't get to see as much of the team as other people, obviously. And when she moved here when she was younger, her brother was actually a Giant fan.
So he kind of forced me to be a Giants fan for a while. And then I just, when I met Andrew, I kind of, I started watching the Steelers with him all the time, and I got really into it, and I just kind of became a Steelers fan from there.
Yeah, the whole Giant thing wasn't going to fly. Not,
not perfect. Sure. You made a good choice. I can say that. Let's quickly talk about the team. Just a couple questions about that before we kind of get back to you guys. Of course, kind of that news yesterday with Big Ben now being able to throw an NFL pass again. And he has trimmed his hair and beard. Is that exciting? Do you think Big Ben can lead this team back to the playoffs?
Oh, 100%.
Absolutely. Dude, like, you have no idea the amount of energy I've held in my body since that video released. We've all been talking about running through brick walls. There is not a single wall left for people to run through. I am like ecstatic to see that man throwing the ball. He, not only was he throwing it, he looked like he was rifling it. So I was just real pumped up. And I mean, our defense was top three in the league last year, and they're only going to get better. Stephon Tua coming back. Colin Cowherd coming out saying their 7-9 team is a load of bull. And I cannot wait till the season starts to see this man. His comeback tour, his revenge tour, it's going to be lit.
That's a good way to put it. So I guess you're kind of moving back a little bit. What do you think of the offseason additions make that both through the draft, through trades, and free agency?
So a lot of people have been talking about how we have a – we have a hole at D tackle. I still kind of think that they're going to put Wormley there, at least because they're only running it about 30% of the time in base. So I'm going to see if they're going to be able to move around that D line the way it is. But I'm really excited for Chase Claypool. I mean, a lot of people don't want to talk about how he kind of looks like and acts like Calvin Johnson on the field, but we haven't seen it yet in the NFL. But the dude is 6'4 and can run a 4'4. So the numbers say that he plays like Calvin Johnson. We'll see it. I mean, I was a little skeptical about the Anthony McFarland pick, but the more I see video on him, I'm starting to think that he's going to complement James Conner really well. I think Jalen Samuels' spot's kind of up in the air. And Alex Highsmith, you can ask Zaina, I was calling for that pick. As soon as Claypool got picked and we were waiting until 102.
He was like screaming as soon as I told him.
I was like, I want Highsmith. And we were going through it. And then she happened to see it on Twitter. The pick was picked before we saw it on TV. And I was like, it's Highsmith, isn't it? And she just smiled. And I just got ripped. I was just so hyped because he just looks like a Pittsburgh Steeler. I felt like he was an AFC North linebacker. And I'm happy that he's on our team, not Baltimore, because I felt that he was also a good pick for Baltimore if they went for him. So.
Oh, that's awesome. I'm hoping there's some receipts on Twitter that I can share. That's pretty cool. Now, I guess one more question about the team here for both of you. What are you most excited about in 2020?
I mean, we've already talked about Ben, but that's really what it is. This team was 8-8 last year with a professional duck caller and a man that looks like he should be managing a Dick's Sporting Goods. I'm excited for Ben to come back, and I see Super Bowl for this team. If it's not this year, if he holds up a lot of rust, I still think he has one more Super Bowl in his pocket. And I'm just really excited to see that man throw the football again. As soon as he steps on that field the first time, the amount of energy and the adrenaline and the feeling I'm going to have is just going to be like none other.
Yeah. Nice. I'm definitely very worried that we might get evicted because he gets pretty intense and loud. And then, like, on top of that, I mean, like, we both get, like, really loud and we're screaming at the TV. So I'm definitely worried about how loud we're going to get this season.
Our neighbor came over last year and she almost called the cops because she thought I was kind of abusing Zaina, but it was nothing like that. I was.
Yeah, she was like genuinely worried for me. And I was like, no, this is normal. There's nothing to worry about.
Oh, my God. That is insane.
Yeah.
So I guess transitioning back to you guys here, I saw a video pinned on either of your Twitter accounts. I can't remember which one it was, but it's quick cuts of different jerseys. And it did pretty good numbers. But my question to you is, how many jerseys do each of you own?
Oh, gosh. I have, okay, so I have Joe Hayden, I have Ben, I have TJ, I have Juju. So I have four, I think.
I think you missed a lot, I think. Don't you? Mine's going to take some time to think about. I can go back to when I was little. I had Cordell Stewart, I have Jerome Bettis, I have Hines Ward, I have Troy Polamalu, I have a Chris Fuamatu Malafala jersey lying around somewhere. That was my guy. I mean, I have all the big names now. I got Juju, TJ, Minka. We have autographed Joe Hayden, Steven Nelson jerseys. I think I counted one time when I was talking to Zach Smith. I think I have 16 or 17 jerseys all together, something like that.
Holy smokes. Now, I have one more question for you guys. And I hope I don't start a fight, because my final question, who is the biggest Steelers fan?
Oh, gosh. That has to be Drew, for sure.
Concedes.
In her wedding vows to me, she basically had to tell the world how much she puts up with me as a Steeler.
Yeah, I mean, like, I love the Steelers, obviously, and I get pretty, like, intense with everything, too, and I get loud, but Drew just takes it to a whole new level. Like, he's sitting here screaming, break his neck, and, like, random stuff. And, like, I just sit there and I can't – I definitely have to say he is definitely the bigger Steelers fan.
He is at Drew Hanna. She is at Zed Abdul R97. Zaina and Drew, thank you so much for joining me.
Thanks for having us. It was awesome.
So how about that, a married couple of Steelers Nation? I figured you'd like hearing a couple voices for this fan spotlight. As always, before I let you guys go, just be sure if you want to be featured on this show, you gotta be following Behind the Steel Curtain on Twitter at BT Steel Curtain, and you gotta be following myself at Michael Beck 56. We need to find you guys. We need to see you interacting with the stuff on Steelers social media. You can only help your cause by following along on Facebook as well and commenting on stories at BehindTheSteelCurtain.com. I want to speak to you. So make it easy for me to find you, and we will get you on the show. Again, I want to thank all my guests, Zaina, Drew, Tim, and Brian. That was a really good one, folks. Thanks again to all of you for joining me and all of you for listening. For BehindTheSteelCurtain.com, you've been listening to Live Mike, and I'm Michael Beck.